Hi, this is Joe McCall at Joseph Associates, and I'm here with Ron Wager, business engineering out of Northbrook. And what we're going to be looking at today is the use of industrial engineering applied to mergers and acquisitions. Corporate mergers and acquisitions are a search for synergy. You want to be able to find that synergy and identify by identifying strategic targets. Once you have a target in sight, you need to do your due diligence and make sure that you're actually going to get the benefits that you're expecting. And then oftentimes after the fact, making sure that the post-merger integration takes it from theory into practice. So we're going to be working through this issue today with Ron. Well, first, Ron, thanks for coming in today.
Well, thanks for having me.
Tell us a little bit about your firm.
Well, primarily we're a management consulting firm based on industrial engineering. The people in the group are either industrial engineers by degree and background or have engineering training of some sort with a lot of manufacturing and distribution experience. And we exclusively service those kinds of clients. So if you're making a product or distributing that product and transporting it someplace, you're a possible client for us. Many of our clients are Fortune 1000 companies, even though we're a relatively small firm, and we do have a group of privately held companies as well. And they're mostly successful companies that want to get better. That's our basic business. We're involved in providing for them cost reductions, efficiency improvements, but all through process improvement. We tend not to come in and ask them to slash headcount and create a savings when there's no reason to do it, but emphasize the fact that you must improve the process. There are ways to change what you're doing, and that benefits you in terms of reduction of labor costs, better use of space, better service to your customers, and so forth. We also do cost analysis, cost-benefit analyses for new facilities, should you move, should you expand, should you consolidate, as well as new equipment. Is that automated equipment out in the shop justified, or automated material handling systems really going to pay for itself? So we live in the world of cost and investment and payback of those two. We also partner with a turnaround firm from time to time and on a lend-lease basis, lend them an industrial engineer when they're working in manufacturing or distribution companies to actually help with the turnaround effort, because our people are very good at recognizing where cost savings are, where opportunities to save are, and in the case of the turnaround firm, our folks are out on the floor working with them, getting instant results and making decisions that get pretty quick cost savings and begin that turnaround process. So that's pretty much what we do in a general sense, and several years ago, we've developed a new facet of our practice, and that's getting involved in what we call, and we call it, we have a much broader definition of due diligence for new acquisitions.
Mm-hmm. Well, Ron, before we jump right into that, a lot of people have heard the term industrial engineering, but really don't know what it means. Could you explain a little bit about what your discipline in engineering is all about?
Sure. And we try to explain it simply by explaining that electrical engineers design and build electrical things. Civil engineers design and build bridges and buildings. Industrial engineers design ways to do things, better ways to do things that save money. The actual industrial engineering mission statement, and I'll paraphrase it, talks about industrial engineers optimizing the resources of production. And we build our practice around that optimization, and we talk about those resources of production, and we'll talk about them in more detail later. But the resources of production we see are the labor force, the facility that holds the operation, the material that's processed or handled, the equipment that's used to process it, the whole process itself, the actual from wall to wall, what's going on in that manufacturing or that distribution set of operations that we call a process, and then the final product, whether it's a product that's bought and resold through a distributor or a product that's actually manufactured or assembled in a manufacturing plant. So we kind of target our practice around labor, facilities, equipment, material, processes, and final product. And That's how we kind of explain it to our clients, and we kind of tie that back to the industrial engineering mission statement.
And industrial engineering, like other engineering disciplines, is highly quantitative.
Right.
This is not a wing and a prayer. It's algorithms, equations, and hard numbers and calculations.
Yeah, that's exactly right. The first thing we ask any prospective client or client that has engaged us is, where do you have the data? How much data do you have? And who can help us get the data? And that becomes sometimes the hardest part of the project, because we have to base our conclusions on proof, facts, figures, and actual data that we draw from the client's own business. So, yeah, you're absolutely right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, I guess, you know, getting back to that theme of merger and acquisition as a search for synergy, very often the senior management of a company, you know, might look at their map of the United States and see that they have heavy concentration of facilities on the coast and not a whole lot in the middle, and realize from a strategic level that's not a good thing. But when they start getting into their distribution system, perhaps this is an area where if you were involved early, you could help them identify what would be the logical point based on optimizing the overall systems cost.
Yeah, and that's why I talked about our definition of due diligence as being pretty broad. We consider due diligence actually coming in before any candidates for acquisition are even identified, and coming up with the ideal process, the ideal facility, in your case, your example, the ideal distribution network, and giving some guidelines to our client, who's the buyer, a prospective buyer, of where to look, what to look for, what fits, what doesn't fit, what could be cost effective, and what doesn't fit quite right. So we could get in way before in the early stages of the thinking process that's going on with that particular buyer.
Mm-hmm. And looking at now, assuming that a target has been identified and you're asked to come in, there would have to be a broad range of possibilities for you to look at. If you're, for instance, looking at, can their manufacturing process be further optimized? Is their distribution system correct? Or I think another area that often comes up is inventory management.
Yeah, we actually try to tie back to those six resources of production that we talked about before, and really talk to our client about what we see and what they see in terms of, are there major issues in terms of facilities improvement or labor force improvement or equipment improvement or material improvement, which would be usually inventory or scheduling material through the plant. And we try to, in some cases, look at all of those, in some cases, look at just a few of them in terms of evaluating the opportunities for improvement after an acquisition is complete. The example you gave of a distribution network really would fall in our facilities bullet, or our facilities resource that we've talked about. How many facilities do you have to distribute your products? Are they in the right place? And if you acquire a company, will they have facilities in the same locations, different locations? Are their markets the same? Are their customers in the same place? Or is there really opportunities to weave those two networks together and have a completely efficient one, which is highly unlikely? Or is there yet a more likely opportunity that it would be a pretty inefficient network, and what would you have to do to make it efficient? Closing facilities, consolidating inventory, consolidating labor forces, and so forth would probably be some of the opportunities that you could get out of rationalizing a distribution network.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think when you start looking at acquisitions, very often the you are looking at the P&Ls, the balance sheets, and trying to determine what are the potential synergies and what items are perhaps not required off the balance sheet for the new entity, and what line items can be reduced or eliminated on the P&L. In the people who are doing that are very often not doing the real detailed analysis. And we talked a little bit previously about an acquisition you were involved in where advice that you gave was to walk away, and then it was the so-called winner's curse.
Right, right. Yeah, that was one of the earlier projects we did. It's actually there were four or five prospective bidders. We were working for one of those prospective buyers for a healthcare products company, and we had a consultant of ours on that buyer's, let's call it a due diligence team, although no offers were on the table at that point. But our buyer wanted to know if he should pursue this opportunity, since the seller stated that there was a manufacturing process improvement of $1 million or so if that plant was converted, a one-plant company, if that plant was converted to cellular manufacturing and lean manufacturing and lean enterprise techniques were instituted, and they wanted that $1 million reflected in the price. They said it would go right to the bottom line and affect the bottom line profit and EBITDA and so forth. Our buyer client asked us to go in and substantiate that and find out if it was really true or not. We actually went through and looked at the opportunities in terms of the efficiency that we were seeing now in the plant and what the opportunities were to increase that efficiency by reconfiguring the machines into a cellular configuration, instituting lean manufacturing techniques, and we couldn't come up anywhere near the $1 million savings. Matter of fact, there were no significant savings at all based on the way the operation was set up. We went back to our client, one of the prospective buyers, and that buyer actually walked away from the deal saved himself a lot of anguish and a lot of loss of money. One of the other four remaining bidders did, in fact, buy the company, and we talked to those owners afterwards and actually proposed that we could come in and help them. They had a heck of a time running the plant efficiently. They couldn't institute any of the savings that were predicted. Their price reflected that $1 million savings that really wasn't there, and we told them we could help them and gave them a proposal to do that, squeeze out whatever savings we could, but we didn't see we weren't very optimistic about it, and we never did wind up working with them, but they wound up reselling the company and getting out from under what turned out to be a huge loss for them.
Yeah, I think if you start thinking about that, that the seller wanted to get paid for the savings that the buyer needed to materialize, and that he was probably looking for a 5 or 6 multiple on EBITDA, that was a pretty expensive tab that the buyer actually picked up to, who knows, $5 or $6 million would just, be my own guess, not knowing anything about it. And very often nobody will ever find out what the actual price was. But the idea that your client walked away from a deal that he lived to, deploy that capital elsewhere, and probably to better effect.
And he really did. He wanted to be in that business, in that industry, and bought another healthcare products company. That was much more profitable, had some cost savings opportunities, and we actually worked with them on that. But it was a much, much better deal.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that is very common when looking at a business, once you get inside and you get to see what the inventory levels are, just from the financial statements, you can compare them, for instance, to RMA data and say, gee, it looks like their inventory is pretty heavy compared to their peer group, but tell me how you would go about analyzing to see if there was capability of reducing that inventory or enhancing the inventory efficiency.
Okay. Remembering that our due diligence assignments tend to be pretty short and have to be done in a very quick time frame, we have to give those answers on inventory pretty quickly, and most inventory analyses are fairly detailed and require some time. The thing that we've done, one of our folks has invented, if you will, some software tools that actually take a look at changes in buy, especially for distributors, changes in buy quantities, taking a look at what are the frequency of and popularity of various products on the shelf, what's the cubic volume they take up, what's the value of those products, and how many of those units should you be buying at what reorder period. And that software is so well developed that we can actually go in and take a sampling in a very short period of time and extrapolate that out to a percentage of dollar savings that we can see in that inventory based on sampling some of the fastest moving product, some of the slowest moving product, and seeing how they fit the algorithms in our little software model. It's a fairly complex model. I say little model, but it's fairly complex. Takes a look at a lot of the variables I talked about, but again, it's got the capability to do sampling, and we've tried to use that in a short time frame to really give our buyer client the idea of, gee, you've got an opportunity of reducing inventory by 5%, 10%, 30%, or whatever the number may be, and those dollars will come off the balance sheet eventually and could be extra working capital that would be available to you once you buy the company. So we've actually done that on a sampling basis using some tools we've developed in-house.
Well, that sounds like if you're able to walk in to one of these situations and, you know, if they have a couple $1 million in inventory and decide that, well, maybe you could use 10% less, that's a pretty significant change in cash flow early on in the process. What type of reductions do you typically see in the engagements that you taking up?
Typically, this would be going through a detailed study and actually getting the savings to materialize after an acquisition or for a client that's already in place when we get there. 20 to 30%, 25% or so is pretty typical. There's that much that goes unseen, unmanaged, and that's the kind of opportunity we see even in what's considered some fairly well-managed inventories.
Where do you see, in terms of just the economics of bringing in industrial engineering talent, about how much inventory do you need in order to expect that it's going to be money well spent to bring in that level of talent?
We really don't look at it quite that way. We look at the effort involved on our part, but our efforts could be between $20,000 to $25,000 on the low side, maybe $50,000 on the high side. But the inventory dollars that were generated, the inventory savings, which admittedly are one-time savings, usually are seven figures. Mm-hmm. We usually approach those kinds of situations more than we approach smaller clients. Remember, many of our clients are Fortune 1000, and even when we're working at a grassroots plant level or distribution center level, there could be quite a bit of inventory involved. So a lot of our paybacks are many, many times our fees. For $25,000 to $50,000, you could get $1 million to $2 million in inventory savings. And those are real numbers that we see. Those are ballpark numbers that we see for a selection of clients.
So it sounds like, if that's the case, that instead of only being called by the Fortune 1000, it ought to be lower middle market companies ought to be availing themselves of the industrial engineering profession.
Right. Right. I'm thinking of a small distributor that we work for, and we'll be doing some projects in the near future as well. We saved their $40 million in sales. They had about $4 million of inventory. We took about $1 million out of that inventory, a 25% savings, and I think the total fee to them was $35,000 to $40,000. So now, does that make sense from our standpoint to undertake projects like that? And we think it does because we've done subsequent projects for that same client. We've just gotten a call 2 days before we're having this conversation from the president of that company that says, come in, I've got some other things. I need your help. I need some other things from you. And we've got a client that calls us when they're in trouble because they've got the confidence in us to achieve these kinds of savings. So we prefer to not charge on a contingency basis and take a very large piece of that $1 million savings, but make it very attractive to the client, but sit back and have that client, the lifespan of that client, generate a lot more business for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and of course, successful engagements tend to create clients who are your best salespeople.
Exactly.
So, yeah, that's a good thing. Any other stories come to mind that I would help illustrate for our listeners where would be a good place, what would be a good example of how you were successfully employed in due diligence?
We have a project that's pending right now, and I'll try to disguise the company. We were brought in by the buyer before they made their offer, as they were beginning negotiations to take a look at a company that basically makes holiday baskets of cheese, sausage, fruit, cakes, candy, and so forth. And we all see these baskets at Christmas time and throughout the holiday season. The problem was is that this company was privately held. The owner liked to have a lot of buildings, liked to have some of his, had a couple of subsidiary businesses, but by and large, for 9 months out of the year, a lot of the building space in both of those buildings, which are on separate sites across town in the same town, were empty. And our buyer client had us in to assess. They said, we think there's a better way to do this. Can we consolidate everything in one building? Is there ways to rationalize these two facilities and maybe move to yet a third building and sell these two buildings? They're very attractive in terms of where they're located in terms of real estate. And they said, go up there and tell us what you think and what your assessment is. So we did a short study, and we substantiated all of their estimates, and the deal has gone through, and now we're waiting to start within the next 30 days of going in and actually putting the right operations in the right building, taking a look at how we can hedge some of the seasonal buildup of inventory, because this is all purchased and assembled type of food and food products that go into these baskets. Should we go to outside warehousing and forego all the warehousing space that we need for 3 months out of the year and that stands vacant? Refrigerated warehouse, especially environmental warehouse to hold perishable kinds of food. Should we go to an outside, and we know we should, but to what extent should we go to an outside third-party logistics company, a public warehouse, rented warehouse space, or whatever? So we're in the process of now, once that transaction is complete, going in and actually executing the changes that have to be done, with the idea that the savings would be primarily in overhead to support two buildings instead of one, and the property on one of the buildings especially, which is very attractive from a real estate standpoint, which could be an income generator for the new owner. So that's a typical situation where our facilities resource is really the driver of where the savings comes in a new acquisition. Very frankly, facilities are one of the leaders. Labor usually goes along with that to some extent, because as you consolidate facilities, you can consolidate the labor force. And then the inventory example we talked about is the other one that's very primary in terms of being talked about most often. Mm-hmm. Equipment is not usually coming into play that greatly. If you've got two or three plants and you've got them loaded with equipment and that equipment is fairly new and the previous owner overbought, there might be some opportunities for savings by selling off that equipment, but that's not a big one. It's usually facilities people and material.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, Ron, that has been, I think, a really good overview of how to use industrial engineers effectively in that never-ending search for synergy and mergers and acquisitions. I'd like to get you back in here another time. We could talk about lean manufacturing and Six Sigma. But for those who might like to get in touch with you, could you give them your contact information?
Sure. We're located in Northbrook. We do a lot of work in the Chicago area and then throughout the Midwest. Some of the examples I gave are on Wisconsin and Indiana. We tend to be a Midwestern-focused firm. Our phone number is 847-824-0809. Our website is, and I'll go slowly because we have a complicated URL, it's www.busenengg.com. It's a tough one to remember. You got to write it down, but when you get there, it's worthwhile. So that'll tell you more about it. We've got examples of projects on there. We've got articles we've written and case studies on there as well. And a little quiz that we ask visitors to take to actually rate their companies and see what their opportunities for savings are.
Okay. Well, Ron, thank you so much for coming in today.
Glad to be here, and thanks for asking me.
Okay. Bye.